and welcome everybody to the CLUIN webinar about the Department of Energy's Technical Assistance Program. This is part of the webinar series, Renewable Energy on Potentially Contaminated Land, sponsored by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Center for Program Analysis. I am Michael Adam. I'm with the EPA Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response Technology Innovation Program, and I will moderate today's Q&A sessions. Before I introduce our introductory speaker for today's seminar, there are a few logistics, and you can go to slide 2 for a summary of these. If you're using a phone line, please mute your phone, but do not put us on hold. If you do not have a mute button, you can use star 6 to mute. We will have a Q&A session where those of you on the phone can take your phone off mute to comment and ask questions. At that time, you may hit pound 6 to unmute. Those listening on either the streaming audio or the phone lines can type in questions by hitting the question mark icon at the top of the HTML presentation. So we'll be holding the Q&A session at the end of today's presentation, but you do not need to wait until the Q&A session to submit questions via that text form. You may also use this form to alert us of any technical problems you may be having. The presenter will alert you to which slide we're on, and you will have to manually advance each slide. If you are using the HTML online version, you can navigate the presentation with the arrow buttons at the top of the screen. And again, this is also summarized on slide 2. You should have already clicked the Go to Session button at the top of the presentation on the seminar homepage. After the session, you can access the feedback form and the links from the sidebar buttons on the seminar homepage. And we've also provided a link on the last slide of this presentation for both the feedback form and additional resources. If you wish to receive a printout receipt of your attendance, you can print the confirmation form that is displayed after you have filled out the feedback form. Additionally, this event will be recorded and archived on the CLUIN website. Within 1 to 2 weeks, you will be able to download it in several formats or replay it online. You may subscribe to our CLUIN podcast to receive new archived seminars as they become available. You may subscribe to all of our RSS feeds by navigating to the news feeds page by going to the CLUIN homepage, clicking on the RSS News Feeds button on the Staying Connected right-hand sidebar. Again, please make sure that you have muted your phone. You may use star 6 to mute your phone if it does not have a mute function. And with that, I will now turn the presentation over to Laura Matthews of EPA's Center for Program Analysis to introduce the Repowering America's Land Initiative and introduce today's speaker from the Department of Energy.
Great. Laura? Thanks very much. Thank you very much, Michael. So my name is Laura Matthews, and I'm the staff lead for Repowering America's Land. And this initiative promotes the siting of renewable energy on potentially contaminated land and mining sites. So the main part of our webinar today will be on Department of Energy's Technical Assistance Program. Before we get to that, I would like to give you a short overview of the Repowering America's Land Initiative. So if you move to slide 4, I have information about Repowering America's Land here. We launched the initiative in the fall of 2008, and this is part of EPA's cleanup programs that have the authority to investigate, assess, and clean up contaminated sites across the country. So we promote the siting of renewable energy on brownfield sites, Superfund sites, abandoned mine lands, RCRA corrective action, and landfills. So to date, we have mapped about 11,000 contaminated sites across the country. That's approximately 15 million acres, and we've overlaid that with the renewable energy potential for all of those sites. So you can find all of this information on our website, epa.gov/renewableenergyland. So moving on to slide 5, why are we focused on renewable energy development for EPA's track contaminated sites? So this is just one of the redevelopment options for contaminated sites across the country. Some sites may be better suited to shopping malls or residential redevelopment when they're cleaned up, but for those sites that do look like they're feasible for renewable energy and the community is interested in renewable energy development on these sites, we think they have a lot of benefits to both communities and to those in the renewable energy field that make them attractive for renewable energy siting. For example, many of these sites have existing infrastructure in place. They have transmission lines going right to the sites. Some of them have substations on site also. Many of them have roads and railways going to the sites as well because of their past industrial use. We found that they have, on some of the sites, they may have lower transaction costs because these sites are contaminated or were contaminated and may not have other uses. It may be easier to either purchase or lease the property. Additionally, we found that many of these sites have great public support for the reuse of the site for renewable energy and faster permitting and zoning. Because these sites, some of the sites have been abandoned for long, communities and municipalities are often eager to work with those in the renewable energy field to site projects on these locations, and so the permitting and zoning time can often be faster. Additionally, communities can benefit from siting renewable energy on their contaminated lands because it will increase the economic value for the property. It furthers environmental sustainability by maximizing land use. It reduces the stress on green fields in and around the communities. It provides clean energy for use either on-site, locally, or to the utility grid, and in some cases, it creates local jobs. So on slide 6, I'll tell you a little bit about our partnership with the Department of Energy Renewable Energy Lab, where Courtney works. We worked with the National Renewable Energy Lab when we first began the initiative to screen all of those 11,000 sites that I mentioned across the country. And so we have information on our website in a Google Earth tool where you can click on sites one by one and find out information about them, such as the acreage they have and their the types of renewable energy it looks like they might be feasible for. We also have that information available in an Excel file and in GIS format. And more recently, we've partnered with Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Lab to do site-specific feasibility studies. So we've identified 12 sites across the country that we're looking at their feasibility for renewable energy. The analysis will determine the best renewable energy technology for the site, determine where on the site is the best place to site that technology, look at how much energy could be generated at the site, what the return on investment is, and what the economic feasibility of the renewable energy project is. So our expected outcome is a tool for the community to use when they're seeking out developers for the site. And we have information on each of those feasibilities on our website, and we have a whole host of tools and fact sheets. And so if you haven't looked at the website before, it was on slide 4, I believe, the website, epa.gov/renewableenergyland. Please take a look at that after the webinar. And so that's my short introduction to the Repowering America's Land Initiative. And as I said, the majority of our webinar today will be spent on the assistance that Department of Energy provides under its technical assistance program. So with that, I would like to introduce Courtney Welsh from the Department of Energy National Renewable Energy Lab. Her work focuses on the design and implementation of energy efficiency and renewable energy policies and programs, as well as public education and outreach in these sectors. She is a member of the DOE Technical Assistance Program, which provides assistance to states, cities, and counties deploying energy efficiency and renewable energy projects.
Great. Thank you so much, Laura. Hello and welcome, everybody. Thank you for the introduction. I'm Courtney Welch, one of the project leads for the Technical Assistance Program, which we often refer to as TAP, T-A-P, at the National Renewable Energy Lab. Today I'm going to tell you a bit about the Technical Assistance Program and discuss how we've been involved in assisting states and local governments to site renewable energy projects on contaminated lands. Please scroll to slide 8. So what is TAP? TAP is managed by a team in DOE, the Department of Energy's Weatherization and Intergovernmental Program, in the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy, or EERE as we call it. The Department of Energy's Technical Assistance Program provides state, local, and tribal officials tools and resources needed to implement successful and sustainable clean energy programs. The effort is aimed at accelerating implementation of Recovery Act projects and programs. So much of our work as of late has been with energy efficiency conservation block grant program recipients and state energy program recipients, but we also offer technical assistance to those states and local communities that have not received Recovery Act dollars. The effort's also aimed at improving performance, increasing return on sustainability of Recovery Act investments, and building proactive clean energy capacity at state, local, and tribal levels. We offer a wide range of resources to serve the needs of states and local communities, from one-on-one assistance to an extensive online resource library to facilitation of peer exchange and best practices learned. We typically, when we're working with communities, we work to build success stories and allows us to disseminate that information across a wider network so that you're learning from your fellow peers and communities. Please move to slide 9. So the TAP Provider Network offers the opportunity to connect with a broad and diverse network of technical experts at no cost to those requesting the assistance. Through TAP, these state and local communities, which include those SEP and EECBG grantees and subgrantees, are eligible to receive free direct technical assistance from this TAP Provider Network, which includes over 200 technical experts. We call these folks on our technical assistance team technical assistance providers, or TA providers, as I might refer to them throughout this presentation. The TAP Provider Network includes 35 organizations, or about 250 individuals, only some of which you can tell are listed on this slide. The TA providers include representatives from the DOE National Laboratories, like NREL, the National Renewable Energy Lab, where I work. That also includes Oak Ridge National Lab, Pacific Northwest National Lab, and Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. And then we also include a whole host of nonprofits, stakeholder organizations, and for-profit consulting firms in this provider network. Please click to slide 10. So how can TAP help you? The technical assistance team can provide short-term, unbiased expertise in energy efficiency and renewable energy technologies, program design and implementation, financing options, mechanisms, structures, performance contracting, which is often referred to as ESPC or Energy Savings Performance Contracting. And then we also work for state and local capacity building. So in addition to providing one-on-one assistance, which is typically what we'll do if we receive a direct request for assistance from a community, we're also able to work with state and local communities at no cost to facilitate peer-to-peer matching, workshops, and training. Please move to slide 11.
Hey, Courtney, this is Mike. I was just going to pause here to ask everybody to please put their phones on mute. If your phone does not have a mute function, please hit star 6. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So laboratory technical assistance, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what the labs are able to offer. That includes NREL, where I work. So NREL established this partnership with Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, Oak Ridge National Lab, and Pacific Northwest National Lab to offer technical assistance to the state and local governments. The four labs are really at the forefront of renewable energy and energy efficiency, technology innovation, policy and market analysis, and financing options and implementation strategies. And TAP allows these state and local governments to quickly access the direct lab expertise. You know, often working in a lab that's as big as NREL, we have over 2,000 employees, we often hear from communities that they have no idea how to contact us or if they can even work with us, if we just have folks that are working in labs developing new technologies. But we have this, at NREL in particular, we have this whole section that's devoted to market transformation and deployment. So that's one of the unique things about NREL is that we're the only lab that has the specific mission to develop and deploy renewable energy and energy efficiency technologies, policies, financing options, and programs. So at NREL, we strive to assist communities in a holistic manner, from strategic energy planning, where we're assisting communities who want to develop a strategic energy plan for their community that encourages energy efficiency and renewable energy. And we take a community cycle approach when we go in to do strategic energy planning. It's sort of a series of steps where you're identifying and convening stakeholders, forming a leadership team, developing a vision, an energy baseline, developing specific goals, evaluating and ranking programs that may exist or that should be put in place, identifying and securing funding sources, developing a plan and implementing a plan, and then almost most important is measurement and verification, followed by plan review and revision. And then we also assist, you know, within that strategic energy planning, we also assist with policy and program design, implementation, and evaluation, and sometimes that can be a separate area of technical assistance as well. That's why it's represented in this middle box on this slide. And then project development, which really involves an entire subset of steps that we're able to offer assistance with, which includes technology identification. So you're identifying the best resource for your area, whether that be solar, wind, or geothermal, what those specifications might be, so system size and specific installation considerations, which takes into account, you know, slope, if you're considering solar, considering roof stability for racking, and then project siting, identifying the best site for that technology based on energy demands, whether it's going to be off-grid or distributed generation, or whether it's going to be grid-tied, distance to transmission and roads plays a big part in project siting if you're going to be grid-tied. And then we can also assist with financing options, just identifying the best financing mechanisms for the project, whether that be a power purchase agreement or a sale-leaseback, and then capturing other federal and state incentives. So many of you have probably heard of the PTC, ITC, or the Treasury 1603 payments, that's been a popular financing mechanism among renewable energy projects. So we can help, you know, walk you through what those options are. And then technical bid reviews may not be very clear, but we can help provide feedback on your RFP. So if you're releasing a bid for installers, if you're releasing a bid for the particular project, we can help provide a feedback on the technical aspects of that RFP before it goes out for a bid. And then project evaluation, we can assist with the measurement and verification, including determining energy savings and emissions reductions. Please move to slide 12. So, the TAP blog, I'm just going to cover a couple of the resources that are available to you through TAP. We encourage you to use this TAP blog, which is a platform that allows states and communities to connect with technical and program experts on their best practices. The blog's updated by the Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy Office on a biweekly basis, and we provide technical blog posts where we'll cover, you know, what is a strategic energy plan, or if you're considering solar PV, what are some of those considerations. So we encourage you to use that blog to ask questions of any technical experts and share your success stories and best practices or lessons learned. If you move to slide 13, I've got a list of upcoming DOE TAP webinars. So TAP offers regular webinars and online training sessions similar to this webinar series. The next one is actually tomorrow on energy savings performance contracting. It's focused on pricing and financing within that ESPC framework. And I've also listed two other webinars which unfortunately occurred earlier this month, but just to give you a sense of the types of technologies and topics that these webinars will focus on. And then in addition to that, NREL offers a regular monthly webinar every fourth Wednesday of each month. These webinars provide information on state and local policies and programs that affect renewable energy and energy efficiency, technology deployment, project financing, technical innovations that can drive market growth. Please move to slide 14, accessing TAP resources. So requests for direct technical assistance to this technical assistance network that I was referring to, there are a couple of resources available to you. I encourage you to use the Solution Center, which has a lot of resources already on that site. It's broken into renewable energy, financing. I think that there are a couple other best practices posted there. And then you can also submit a request directly, either online or through our call center. So that call center number is listed here. It's 1-877-337-3827. You can also email us at the Solution Center, or you can submit a request directly through the Technical Assistance Center. That's that second bullet. That's a screenshot of what the TAC, as we refer to it as, TAC, looks like. For most EECBG and SEP grantees, you should already be able to access this site. For others, you may have to call the hotline to get access to this site, and then you'll be able to get in on a regular basis. So slide 15. I'm going to shift gears slightly to talk about how NREL and the Technical Assistance Program have been involved in siting renewable energy projects on contaminated land. And I know Laura discussed this earlier in her introduction of Repowering America's Land Initiative, but basically that renewable energy offers many benefits to contaminated land sites, and vice versa. Contaminated lands are also an excellent option for renewables. And I won't cover those same bullets, but oftentimes contaminated lands are located close to existing infrastructure. Those same sites are often not in use or underused, and renewable projects can quickly increase the economic value of that property. By choosing to build on contaminated sites, you're saving those green fields or open spaces that might otherwise be able to be used for other either redevelopment purposes or parks. So please move to slide 16.
Courtney? Just a moment. I would like to remind everybody to please put their phone on mute. And just as a reminder, that we can tell that not everybody does have their phone on mute. So please put your phone on mute. If it doesn't have a mute function, please hit *6. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So this map displays the solar resource potential across the country, and it's overlaid with EPA's tracked contaminated land sites. And as you can see, many of these contaminated lands are located in or near areas with high resource potential. Just to further encourage, thinking about renewable energy as a redevelopment option for contaminated land sites, as one option, as we were mentioned earlier. And then on slide 17, the next slide, you can see the same is true for wind resources across the U.S., that many of these EPA tracked sites are located in areas with high wind resource potential. Now, wind is very location-dependent. It's not necessarily a viable option for contaminated land sites located in urban areas. So that's one particular consideration for wind renewable energy projects. And then renewable energy resource maps. All resource maps can be found through NREL at this website at the bottom of page of the slide 18 page. One of the first things you want to do when considering renewable energy projects for contaminated lands is to evaluate the renewable energy resource potential for that particular area. NREL's resource maps and data includes dynamic maps and GIS data, measurement and instrument data center, and then a renewable resource data center and a solar radiation research center. Slide 19, renewable energy considerations. For renewable energy on a site with open space, you might want to consider ground-mounted PV. Wind turbines are a viable option for renewable energy in open spaces. As I previously mentioned, wind is very location dependent, so if you're in an urban area, that might be a particular special case where you're siting smaller wind for that area. And then central plants, biomass, solar thermal, and geothermal for open spaces. And then for renewable energy on sites with buildings or a set of buildings, you might want to consider rooftop solar PV. And there are a lot of considerations with rooftop PV. Roof stability, what your roof warranty is, what's the future use of that particular building. If it's going to be demolished, you don't want to be considering any of these renewable energy projects quite yet. If you think that you're going to be redeveloping the roof of a particular building, you may not want to put solar PV up there. And then solar hot water, solar ventilation for preheat, and daylighting is also an option. Not necessarily considered a renewable option, but definitely an energy efficiency mechanism for buildings. please move to slide 20. So preliminary screening, as I mentioned earlier, the first step to considering renewable energy project as part of your redevelopment plan for contaminated sites is to look at renewable energy resource potential for that area. There are several resources available to you to look for the resource potential for a given location. These are some of the, I've listed some of the free online resource assessment tools, particularly EPA's Renewable Energy Interactive Mapping Tool. It allows users to search by renewable energy type and or contaminated land type for the site location. And that is an excellent free online tool through the Repowering America's initiative. And then a couple others that I've listed here are what we call IMBY, In My Backyard. It's a web-based software tool where you can choose a location. If you have a building, you can draw an area on that building using a simple draw tool that will establish the acreage and the renewable energy resource for that particular area. It's kind of a cool tool to use. And then there's RETScreen, which is another renewable energy technology screening tool for renewable energy and energy efficiency technologies. So if you're considering improving energy efficiency for an existing building on contaminated sites, that might be a useful tool for you as well. And then a few other tools that are available from NREL can be found at this website that I've listed on the bottom of slide 20. On slide 21, once you've considered what resources are available and if you've established that your site has good resource potential for solar, the next level of considerations include, are you looking at the built environment? And where it's unshaded, you should be sizing it to capacity with if there's existing pipes and wires and what your load might be. If the on-site energy demands, is 100%, you might want to consider having that be a DG, distributed generation system. And so these are just a couple considerations. On roofs with existing buildings that are less than 5 years old, that can accept an added load, that and you want to always look to reduce the solar load on buildings. It's particularly sensitive with roof-mounted systems. And then on compromised land, such as landfill, brownfields, abandoned mine sites, it's really important to consider, that you are saving those green fields for open space and for nature and for parks. Not necessarily contaminated land site related, but if you're installing on green fields or an open space that is a non-contaminated land site, always looking to minimize disturbance for the whole ecosystem. We have a lot of folks at the lab right now looking at ground-mounted PV and what that disturbance, how to mitigate and minimize the disturbance to that open vegetation and that whole ecosystem. Please move to slide 22. Similarly, once you've established that your site has good wind resource potential, some additional considerations are that wind turbines need to stand out. There is a certain if buildings are close by or if there are trees close by, they have to be a certain level. It's typically twice the size, so that wind flow will actually reach those turbines. Wind resource is far more site-specific, as I previously mentioned, than solar. For larger turbines, we highly encourage doing a met tower for at least a year or longer to gather wind data. We're starting to see a lot of wind turbines being installed in areas where there hasn't been a met tower up for a year, and so the wind resource potential was actually highly underestimated for that particular installation where, you know, had a met tower been installed and data had been collected on the wind resource potential for a year previous, that output probably would have been closer to what was expected. So as Laura mentioned, NREL has partnered with EPA on Repowering America's Lands to assess the feasibility of redeveloping several contaminated land sites with renewable energy technologies. But NREL has also been providing direct technical assistance to states, cities, and counties in need of assistance in identifying their high potential contaminated land sites and assessing which renewable energy technologies might be the best fit. A couple of recent examples of TAP's involvement in siting renewables on contaminated land sites are Richmond, California, Puerto Rico, Carroll County, Maryland, and Templeton Gap Landfill in El Paso County, Colorado. And I'll just walk through a couple of these as examples. In Richmond, California, we're looking at their entire inventory of contaminated land sites and trying to narrow it down to the most high potential sites. This initially began with a white paper that was going to be overlaid with factors for determining the best sites for redevelopment with renewables and what barriers there might be to renewable energy development. What began as a white paper turned into a decision tree tool. So I've given a very small, this is not meant to be read, example of what kind of decision tree we're looking for to guide Richmond through, you know, taking a look at their whole inventory and narrowing it down to the best sites. So if you're looking at a landfill, is the slope greater than 50% or less than 50%? And what happens from there on out in terms of eliminating certain sites? If you move to slide 25, Puerto Rico is another area where we've provided technical assistance. NREL was we sent one of our engineers to assess the potential of six landfill sites for solar PV, and we're in the stages of finishing up a feasibility study for those sites, and we'll be holding a kickoff call with Puerto Rico actually later today to discuss the outcomes of that feasibility study. So I've listed, you know, for each of these what our deliverables are under TAP. Here it's an on-site visit followed by a feasibility study for each of these landfill sites. And in the feasibility study, we look at the potential for solar renewable energy generation, the economics associated with that, and really the overall feasibility of pursuing a renewable energy project on those sites. Another example is Carroll County, Maryland. There were two closed landfill sites in Carroll County. They've asked us to look at installing or the potential to install solar PV on two of those sites. We're in the process of doing a solar resource assessment and mapping for those areas, so determining first and foremost what their solar resource potential is, estimating usable acreage, and then conducting an economic feasibility site. So we're considering, you know, what federal and state incentives are available to them. That typically is dictated by who the owner is and who the renewable energy owner is. So, for example, with the Treasury 1603 payments, where you can receive a Treasury grant payment of 30% of your total cost, the eligible entity has to be a private tax-paying company or business. in order to recoup those. So we will talk them through, you know, what the ownership looks like, what federal and state incentives are available to them based on ownership, and this gets a little bit into liability when we start talking about ownership, but that's sort of a separate issue among contaminated land sites. We also look at electricity rates, and then we consider, you know, what financing options are out there. The next slide, Templeton Gap Landfill. This is just one site, a closed 43-acre landfill located within a business park in El Paso County. The request was for NREL to assist with designing and implementing a financial model for renewable energy technology development on this closed landfill. Right now we have folks developing this financial model for redeveloping this particular landfill with one or more renewable energy technologies. So that is almost primarily finance-based, the work that we're providing for them. So under this particular deliverable, we'll be including a business opportunity, a look at what the business opportunity is to for Templeton Gap Landfill to present to their potential investors and developers. So how to, on the next slide, slide 28, how to access NREL directly. You can submit a technical assistance request directly to us. I've listed our website at the bottom of this page, and then you can email your request with a brief description of what your request for assistance is, who your contact is in the community, and that does need to be a state or local government official or an agency, what your timeline is, your expected, you know, if you have certain milestones within your project, we encourage you to list those, and then if you have a lab expert in mind in particular, please list them as well. So you can email that info to tech.assist@nrel.gov. And then if you look at this webpage that I've listed here, that will direct you to NREL's direct technical assistance to state and local communities. And there are a whole list of, you know, what areas we can assist with, a couple of resource pages, and then links to our other webinars. You can sign up for webinar alerts there as well. And then the last slide is just my contact information. If you'd like to contact me directly, talk a little bit more about how TAP might assist you in your community, I'd be more than happy to. And I've also listed, again, our direct technical assistance website and our technical assistance email.
So we're ready for some questions. If you're on the phone and you muted your phone with *6, you may use #6 to unmute at this time. You may ask questions. If there's no questions over the phone lines, we can jump to
questions.
Go ahead. Are there any questions on the phone lines?
This is Milwaukee. I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
For the landfill sites that you're evaluating for PV, are you looking at PV applications that penetrate landfills, like that penetrate the top of it, or are they ones that sit on the top?
We're primarily looking at those that sit on the top in a racking format.
Any cost estimates as far as what that might impact as far as the cost per kilowatt?
We haven't really seen too big a difference between either penetrating the earth or not with these ground-mounted systems. Particularly with landfills, the distance of penetration has not been that great that we've seen too many problems with those, but we have considered, usually in our feasibility studies, we put in several options for what you might be looking at and cost out, you know, what each of those might look like. So no, we haven't seen a significant difference in installation techniques.
Okay.
Hello, I'd like to make a comment and ask a question. This is Ted Walpin with North Carolina DENR. I've heard a lot of discussion about the wind energy conversion systems being more location-based, and I'm assuming that that is based on the fact that the traditional tower-type turbines require wind speeds at fairly higher ranges. I would gather to say 50-plus miles per hour. I just wanted to know if NREL was aware of the fact that there are a lot of companies out there which have been producing more innovative designs for wind energy conversion systems that require less lower wind speeds and are not as tall of a type system, are actually lower profile systems, and if that would actually affect the data, if these are viable type systems, if that would actually affect, you know, the data where these resources could be used. Because there are companies out there that are making these types of systems for much lower profile.
It certainly would. And we have several of our engineers across the lab have been looking into, you know, what else is going on in the market right now in terms of new developments with wind turbines that can handle lower speeds and can be built at a much shorter height. Most of our data is taken from a 50-meter reading, so yes, that is awfully tall compared to what might be coming out, but we do try to include the newest technology when we're doing our feasibility assessments, so considering what else might be available.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't mind sending you an email of a particular company and product that has an interesting product like this. I'll just send you an email.
That would be great.
Yeah, thanks, Courtney.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
This is Phil Windsor with TCEQ in Austin. Have you seen any size limitations on the landfill for solar? Because I'm looking at a fairly small landfill, 12 to 14 acres. Would that preclude using a PV system for my pump and treat?
No, it wouldn't. You know, one of our first assumptions with PV is that, particularly as we're developing this decision tree tool for Richmond, California, one of our initial assumptions is that no open space is too small for PV, just in order to maximize the number of high priority sites and allow, you know, that particular community to look more seriously at developing PV across the city. But no, 12 to 14 acres is plenty.
Okay, and I'd also looked into the various forms, and I think the blocks post whatever without having to go into the landfill is what I've seen as being recommended more often than not.
Yeah, that tends to be the most common.
Thank you.
This is Seth Kirschenberg with Energy Communities Alliance. We work with the local governments around the DOE facilities and lab facilities. I heard you talk a lot about the brownfield sites and non-federal sites. Are these programs also open to the local communities who are building projects on DOE-owned facilities or DOD or other federal agency-owned facilities? For example, one community is building a PV on a landfill, and obviously they have, like, technical assistance. The landfill happens to be at a DOE-owned facility, but it's going to be run by the county.
Yeah.
We're still able to assist with that type of a situation, as long as the state, city, county will have some ownership over the project, we're able to assist with them. And we've seen a lot of communities come in where they're already working with a federal agency. You know, Richmond, California is already working with EPA Region 9. That doesn't mean that, you know, it's a federal site that they're working on, but we do often work with communities that are already in touch with federal agencies. But in this situation, we'd be able to assist that particular community.
Hi, this is Taylor McKinley at the Center for Neighborhood Technology in Chicago. Just looking at the maps you have online by state, and I'm looking at the dots, wondering if there's somewhere I can actually see where exactly those are located in terms of, the address or latitude, longitude, or something like that.
Yeah, this is Lura. All of that information is on the Repowering website, epa.gov/renewableenergyland, and you can download an Excel spreadsheet that has all of the sites listed by state, and you can, you know, type in, I think it has the lat long listed there. Our Google Earth tool also has all the sites, and you can click on a dot on the Google Earth tool and find out more about the site that way.
Thanks.
Hey guys, as a follow-up question, we had one that came on from online. Are there resource potential maps for Hawaii?
Yes, there definitely are. We NREL's been involved in the Hawaii Energy Initiative, and a lot of that work has not just focused on energy efficiency on the islands, but on renewable energy. So there has been a lot of renewable energy studies and resource mapping of that area. So if that data is needed or some of the maps that are from Hawaii, we can get those to folks.
Okay, we have a ton of questions that are coming. I'll just go ahead and start reading some of these. I know that you talked a little bit about how you work with local governments, and this question is in regards to developers. So you work mostly with clients of local governments. Do you work with developers also? And I'm assuming that the answer to that is that they would have to work with through their local government. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. And just as sort of a side note, because we're a national lab, we can't compete with the private sector. So our role really when we're working with the community on a renewable energy project is as an advisor, feedback, consultant, and we're able to discuss projects with developers once they're chosen through a competitive bid, but we really aren't there to influence the project in any other way.
Okay. I have a couple questions here that are online from regarding several sort of EPA cleanup programs. And the first one is, I represent a school district that owns part of a Superfund site that has been remediated. What help or in regards to grants, et cetera, are available to enable us to evaluate placing solar development? And it would be a pretty large commercial effort, but they need help to get engineering and cost information together to the point of being able to get the bids and bidders to respond.
That sounds very similar to the work that we're doing under the Repowering America's Land initiative.
Okay.
So that could, I mean, it could come in as a TAP request under the Technical Assistance Program for our initial site assessment and a feasibility study, but you may also want to look at Repowering Initiative as a potential funding mechanism during the next year or so when that ramps up.
Right, Courtney. I think we are planning to do more of the feasibility studies with the NREL next year. Unlike the TAP program, though, ours will be competitive. And so for a particular site, you could either try to get funding through EPA for a Superfund or brownfield or any contaminated site, or you can try to go through the Courtney and the Technical Assistance Program.
Okay. And another question sort of related to Superfund, but related to, not Superfund sites. So It's in regards to liability relief. And, you know, it's noted that many, you know, Superfund sites offer such types of relief. But if you're not in the federal or state sort of CERCLA programs, and with regards to landfills, they aren't typically offered that. And so the question is, what liability protection is available for redevelopment of regulated solid waste facilities, for example, closed landfills, for solar deployment? If there is no such protection afforded, and the comment here is that they haven't found any, has NREL incorporated this potential risk in its financial analysis? And can NREL offer any guidance on liability relief analogous to existing programs addressing federal and state Superfund sites?
You know, I'm not sure that liability relief and protection has been built into our economic analysis in these feasibility studies. It's certainly something we talk about with communities, and something that we work pretty closely with EPA on, because that's really their area of expertise is, you know, what is the liability, what is the environmental liability there in terms of contaminated land sites. There is a EPA fact sheet page. Laura, you might have that address more handy than I do, but that there's a series of EPA fact sheets that do list not only the renewable energy incentives for developing on contaminated lands, but any potential liability relief incentives that might be available in your state for developing contaminated lands with renewable energy. So that's a potential resource, although it sounds like you hadn't found any. So I don't know that there would be any listed there. The database of state incentives for renewables and energy efficiency, the DSIRE.USA.org, is another great website for state incentives, and I think that they do include some liability relief incentives in terms of renewables on that website. So those are two good resources. I think that we are going to see more and more often develop NREL focusing on, you know, what liability protection means for those sites specific to renewable energy projects. We just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, and this is Laura. I'll just add that, you know, I think if you, if it's not a federal site, states usually have their own liability protections, and if it seems like neither one of those will fit for your particular site, please contact me, and, you know, we'll see what we can do here to work with our headquarters and state partners on the particular site.
Okay, I had a couple questions here that are regarding TAP, real quick. And with the first one is, does TAP need to be involved from the start of a project, or can they be involved with one of the steps, such as project evaluation?
That's correct. We can be involved in either the whole project from cradle to grave, or we can be pulled in for just one particular step of a project. Oftentimes we're contacted when, you know, in a project that's in five phases, we may be contacted in phase three, where they're looking at the economic feasibility of a project only, and that's what they need help with at that moment.
Okay, the second question is, can TAP help a company acquire brownfield land if this company has an opportunity to use it for renewable energy production, and whom do we contact? And they would also like to know more on the PPA options.
We can help, well, we can assist that company if they're partnered with a state or local government or agency. We cannot help private sector companies acquire certain lands. On the PPA side, it's specific to what you're looking for with power purchase agreements. We'd be happy to help out in developing power purchase agreements whether it be, you know, the pricing mechanisms or, you know, what your return on investment is and how that plays into your power purchase agreement and what you're looking for in terms of payback.
I had a question about federal facilities. Can a federal facility purchase renewable energy or install renewable energy facilities through a UESC?
I believe that federal agencies are starting to look at UESCs more and more often. It's a utility energy performance contracting, I believe. And it does allow for renewable development. It's usually in conjunction with energy efficiency first, and renewables is built into that as sort of a final part of that contract in terms of improving energy efficiency and increasing clean energy for a particular project or location. But yes, I believe that federal facilities can
And a question about costs come in is, what's the cost for NREL assistance?
Free. The technical assistance program is, any technical assistance that we provide through TAF is free to those requesting the assistance. Any funding that we receive is for our internal budget. So if we send engineers for an on-site assessment, we cover their travel and their time spent out in the field. But no money is transferred to that person that is requesting assistance.
Another question here regarding communities. So what institutional or community obstacles are you encountering with various sites and uses? For example, solar versus biofuels versus wind.
I think on the community side, what we're seeing is, you know, public outreach and awareness. So depending on the size of the project, we tend to see PV with a little less pushback up from the general public and community, just because of sheer size of the project. Biomass facilities are a little tricky because there are a lot of variables involved. Where you, for a biomass facility, you want your fuel stock to be within 50 miles mostly of your biomass project, and it does affect the community a bit more when you're building those larger projects. So more on the public outreach and awareness side of things, we're seeing those as community obstacles.
Okay. I have actually a question here from a remedial project manager at EPA. The question is, I'm a remedial project manager for Superfund in Region 8, and we have a Superfund landfill where the private property owners are very interested in a solar project at the site. Can EPA directly request TAP assistance to provide support for the private property owners in this endeavor, or do they need to get the county or other local government involved to access TAP resources?
They would need to get the county or local government involved.
Okay.
But that's sort of a twofold response, because once they do have the county or local community involved, EPA can request technical assistance on their behalf, but we would need them to already be partnering with that local community.
Okay. Are there guidance documents on the TAP website for grant applications for brownfield development where government has some level of ownership? And are these grants available to all states in the United States?
I might toss that one over to Lura. I think that type of information is much more easily accessible through EPA's resources.
So was the question,
Water guidance documents will move. Okay.
Sorry, please read it again.
Okay. Are there guidance documents on the TAP website for grant applications for brownfield development where government has some level of ownership? And the second part is, are grants available to all states in the United States?
Well, I think where the EPA nexus would be is that a brownfield site where the city has part ownership could apply for a brownfields, cleanup or assessment grant. And I believe that the ownership doesn't really affect the technical assistance program. So I think as long as the city or county is involved in the project, then they can apply for the Department of Energy technical assistance program.
That's great. Yeah, and we do not currently have anything posted on our TAP website.
And real quick here, I have noticed that we have just passed 1 o'clock Eastern time, and that was the scheduled length of the seminar. I don't think we have an immediate need to end the seminar, but if for those of you that do need to leave, please make sure to fill out the feedback form, which is available through a link on the final slide of today's presentation. And thank you for your participation. If the presenters have a few moments, I'd like to go through a few more of these questions. Is that okay?
Sure. That's fine.
I have a question from for brownfield sites. I don't know. Well, let me just read it. For brownfield sites that are underwater, in other words, the cost of the required cleanup exceeds the market value, have you found the revenue from renewable energy sales significant in making up some or all of the shortfall?
I'll take a shot at that, Courtney, and then if you want to add. I think that usually the margins on renewable energy projects are pretty small, and so a developer coming on a property and leasing it for renewable energy, I think that, the lease payment could go towards the cleanup, but it wouldn't be a significant amount of money. So it might help a little bit, but depending on the cleanup, it might not be a significant contribution.
Okay. You talked a little bit about how, or at least mentioned a few of the details about how the wind potential is determined. But I had a question. On large abandoned mining sites, how is the wind potential determined? Many of these sites are hundreds of thousands of acres, and the methods for finding a mean wind speed is important to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. The way that we determined each site's wind potential was just one lat long point for the site. And so for solar, that doesn't really matter. But for wind, obviously one part of the site could have a very different wind potential than another part of the site. So I think that using the EPA, our data for the abandoned mine lands is a starting point, but then you might want to take that and overlay it with some of the other tools that Courtney mentioned to get a sense of the wind speed, around that lat long point.
Another question regarding TAP. If we requested TAP assistance, how quickly would NREL respond?
If we typically look at the request as soon as it comes in and put it through our review, so we have a core team here that takes a look at what the request is, whether we can respond, how quickly we can respond, and what team of experts we might need to pull together in order to do that. So while we're doing that, it might take 2 days to get a response from us. We try to turn around at least an initial response that, yes, we've received your request, and yes, it fits into TAP's eligibility requirements, and we'll follow up within 24 hours.
Okay. There's a couple technical questions here, and one of them is, it's a little bit long, but let me get through it here. Racks PV installs at Houston, Miramar, and Broxton required substantial slurry fill in order to create support for precast spread PV rack footings or small pier footings with modest penetration without impacting the landfill cap. I realize these are brownfields. I realize that these are brownfields rather than landfills, but do you see the continued need for such ground mount support? If so, do you have cost information for that additional fill as well as implications for future access to the cap, vent pipes, and et cetera?
We do have that information. I'm not equipped to respond to that directly, but we can certainly get that information out to you. I've worked with some great engineers on some of these Repowering America plan sites and feasibility assessments, and we do have information surrounding RACT PV and what that additional fill and additional cost might look like. So please feel free to contact me directly. My email is on that presentation that I gave, and you can send an email to that tech.assist@nrel.gov.
I think we've covered all the rest of the questions that's come in through the text. Are there any more questions for the people participating via phone lines? Well, if there are no other questions, I would like to thank today's presenters and also the participants. Once again, the feedback form is available through a link on the final slide of today's presentation. We would appreciate it if you would fill that out for us. And thank you for attending today's webinar.